Good evening. This is the discussion group call from the National Liberty Alliance. And my name is Terry Moore. This call begins every week on Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we just basically discuss anything that anybody wants to talk about. The NLA is not responsible for what each person says, but we just give them the floor, and each person is responsible for what they say. The floor is open to anybody that wants to talk, and I'll leave it at that. So please go ahead. It's all yours.
Suspense is killing me. Somebody has a speaker on that I'm
picking up feedback. Oh, you're getting feedback? That's probably me.
Okay.
Let me
better.
Kill this. There. I don't need that either.
Talk?
Yeah.
Still coming through. Must be through Dick. I mean,
well,
Dick can see.
We still have 10 seconds left, and then I was going to say Dick is pretty lockjawed tonight. So
must be Dick, because it doesn't. That's still coming through.
Dick's muted.
Yeah, it must be through you, Terry.
Do we have a Skype session? No.
Yeah, it's still open.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's still open.
Skype,
so we've got two running here.
That's what it is. So we got to mute one.
Pretty hard to beat that, huh?
Yeah. Let me see if I can mute myself on Skype. I don't even know how to do that.
Oh, sure you do.
I don't remember.
It's got the little phone. Oh, but it went away. Oh my God! What did they do with it?
Well, the phone makes an audio call. I thought we were on an audio call.
Did you come in on the green dialer?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you got two hooks in.
I got two hooks in.
Drop one or the other because you're hooked through Skype and the green dialer.
Okay.
Testing.
I'm not hooked on Skype.
Testing. Testing.
Testing.
It went away, huh?
I don't know. Testing, testing.
Well, I'm still here.
You still got an echo? Yeah, I do too. Well, let me. I don't know how I can kill Terry off here. I don't have an option. I'm disconnected. I guess I'll just turn off Skype. How's that? Did that help? Seemed to, huh?
And I muted myself.
Okay, if you're unmuted now, it's coming through you, Terry.
It's coming through me. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
How do I change the microphone on this?
You got a speaker right behind it?
Yeah, I got a speaker behind it, but it usually blocks it enough. Maybe if I turned it down, let's see if that helps. What if I turn this down? I need to know which one. Somebody talk for a second, or two, or three, or five.
One second talk.
There. Can you hear it now?
I think so. Nope, it went away. It sounds quiet.
Yeah, I turned it way down.
Much better. Much, 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 much better.
Okay, well, I'll bring it back up. There, now I can hear you again. You know, there's been a lot happening this week. You know, it makes me wonder when all this is going to start happening. Q dumped some stuff last night or night before last. And so it just makes you wonder. You can kind of see the news media and reports here and there and different articles that they're starting to kind of desensitize America and the public, the American public, to the idea that Hillary Clinton didn't do some things right, and it could have been Obama at the very top of the whole thing. Most people are poo-pooing it right now, but they've been exposed to the idea. And it's just interesting to watch this slowly come out. And the floor is open, Dick, if you want to say anything. Right now it's just you, me, and Jan.
I was just going to say it. It's interesting that the FBI and the federal authorities are checking against Pritzker up in Chicago.
Against who?
Pritzker, the quote-unquote Illinois, so-called Illinois governor.
Oh,
He took all the toilets out of the house next door, which he also owns, and got an $883,000 tax refund for doing it. And they're checking that out now. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Don't all the governors do that, or all the mayors or whatever do that?
I think it's interesting that it was done right either just before or right after he received the so-called election.
Mm.
He wanted to get rid of the other governor who was paying everything out of his own pocket, not claiming anything, and doing things that should be done in the governor's office. And he came in, and the first thing he did is raise taxes.
Well, that's
normal.
Of course,
he doesn't call it raising taxes. So I got a feeling he might be going bye-bye before long.
Let's see, where is Sing Sing? Is that, or what's in Joliet? Isn't there a federal pen in Joliet?
Yep. But he wouldn't go there. He'd probably go to some highbrow
country club.
Yes.
Well,
if these people knew the stuff that's going on, they'd be up in arms, but they don't know it, and they're not going to find it out from the local people, because they're making money hand over fist and claiming that they don't have money for anything.
Yeah.
I got to see Papadopoulos talk for the first time. I heard him just talk about what his story is. He's got a new book out, Deep State Target. And if you believe him, he had nothing to do. He was set up in every turn on this thing. And he was just trying to help out. And they set him up big time. And it was just interesting to hear. And what did I put? I've got it written down up here. Let me scroll up to where it is. From Papadopoulos, he talks about MIFSUD, which is kind of like a handler. This is the first guy he met in a CIA clandestine school the CIA is running down there. His handler was not Russia. Boom. British and Australians deeply involved. Boom. Foreign interests giving money to campaigns opposing Trump for 2020 election. Boom. TPP and anti-Brexit motives, boom. PSYOP to implement coup against the president, treason, boom. Obama was the kingpin, boom. Rogue elements still exist, boom. The mainstream media ran with bad information, boom. It will take a long time to deprogram Americans, boom.
Yep.
And I think all of that is spot on. I tend to believe it, but it's only one source, and I can't prove a thing about it. But it sounds right. And all of this stuff, this is such a mess. And it's the least, most untransparent, most opaque, if you want to use the opposite of transparency, opaque. It's the most opaque administration in the history of the United States was Obama's, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the best part,
go ahead.
The best part of this is that most of these people don't have any idea that what they're doing is treason.
You think so?
They don't know.
I agree.
They got to be awful stupid not to know that you're trying to take out a president. It's not just another walk in the park.
They thought it was just politics because she deserved to win.
Yeah, right. Who's the guy that was he head of the FBI or CIA? And is he Secretary of State now? He ends with a P. He was saying that, what is it?
Pompeo?
Yeah, Pompeo. He said, oh yeah, they lied, cheated, and stole, you know, nothing new there. You know, they've been doing that all the time. That's just accepted by, you know, the people in command will do that, you know?
Well, there's a good question to discuss. Is the CIA, do they have their own motives?
Sure.
Or do they have the motives of America?
No, it's not American, it's theirs. And they're a rogue outfit that's in control.
I think you're absolutely right.
Totally rogue.
Most of those outfits started as criminals.
Yeah.
Hi, Jim.
And I've gotten even worse criminals as time went on.
You bet.
Dug in deeper and deeper.
Well, if we go back to the Civil War, when they were putting through the going from one state to another, I'll put it that way, and they were trying to put the railroads in, that was all done by criminals. And they hired criminals to defend them, and that's how we got a stagecoach company that later went into becoming a railroad, and they hired everybody to go against people such as Jesse James and Frank James, and people don't know that Jesse and Frank were two good people.
I've heard that stated before.
Well, Jesse wanted to be a teacher and Frank wanted to be a preacher. And when the railroad sent their hoodlums after them, they had they were trying to protect themselves, but the main person they tried to protect was their mother.
Yeah.
And when the hoodlums came in and they threw a bomb in the house and blew off her arm, that, let's say, removed the quote-unquote blinders off them, and they went out full blast.
Yep. Well, all of those early detective agencies or whatever, Pinkertons or whatever they were basically crooks, weren't they? Just thugs hired?
Yes, they are, and they still are.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a friend who was an officer in the National Guard. He was commanding officer. And a quote-unquote detective went in and put handcuffs on him and then beat the hell out of him and put him in the county jail. Luckily, he called me And I went down to get him out of the jail, but another officer who was in the National Guard got him out of jail before I got there. But this guy, these guys, when they hire somebody to be a detective, and I wanted to become one, and I was glad I didn't do it, but these guys will do anything for a buck. When I was a deputy sheriff, I got several people on the sheriff's department. At that time, we were all deputies. You were either the sheriff or you were a deputy. A deputy got a whole $10 a day, if he was lucky. We had to pay our own uniforms, our own guns, our own leather. Everything was out of our pocket. The only thing they gave us was a badge, or two badges, whatever was necessary, and an ID card. That was all we got. Everything else was out of our pocket. If we worked more than 8 hours, that was our baby, not anybody else's. These guys wanted to become paramilitary, and when they got to the point that they could become paramilitary, they suddenly got rank. They got paid money that you and I couldn't believe. And these friends suddenly became enemies. And that's what's still going on. And the more people that they can put on, the more they can charge taxes in their budget. But anything that they get money coming in is never told to the public. And these guys are telling right now on television and on radio and on the newspapers how deep in debt we are and the roads are terrible. I mean, you can't go anywhere without hitting potholes. And they're saying, oh, we got to have money for this. But all this money is stuck in private accounts, which they call CAFR, Certified Annual Financial Reports, and is never reported back to the people. They got trillions of dollars, and the stuff that we were paying our own retirement in, they were putting in and keeping it and living high on the hog on. But we were never told about it. This is the stuff people don't know. That's what I say. Now, every one of these guys are committing treason, and they don't have brains enough to know it.
Remember Nuremberg. It doesn't work.
Well, let's go back to Lindbergh. When his son was so-called kidnapped, and they named two German citizens living in the United States, and they put them to death. No, it was not anybody like that. It was the so-called government who had killed his son.
Mm-hmm. Who was the, I think he was a senator from Illinois in the 60s, maybe 70s, that was going against the grain. And I think he had twin daughters, and one of them was either kidnapped or killed in the middle of the night. And he changed his whole tune.
There's been all kinds of that stuff. And I can name probably a good half dozen or more people that were connected with me who have all been murdered. And it just breaks my heart. And that's the reason I never told anybody, I didn't tell anybody for a long time that I was the... is your governor of Illinois, not de facto like they've got now. And when I was trying to take over the state, I had people coming to me that I wouldn't have hired to take care of a dog. But I just simply refused them. But then I had some good people want coming to me, and I was afraid to get them involved. But I finally got a group together, and we were up at Rockford. And the kid that was my attorney general was from down by East St. Louis. And he was a Jewish boy. He was a rabbi. Heck of a good kid. And we had a good group going, and we were going to take over Illinois. Well, he called me up. He said, I've got to go out to Denver, Colorado, to the Veterans Hospital out there. Will you take me? And I said, sure, I'll come up and get you. So I took him out to Denver, and I dropped him off. And I told him, now, don't get in any trouble out here. Well, I won't go into the details on it, but next thing I know, I got a call from him, and he said, I'd like for you to come out and pick Richard up and take him back to Peoria. Well, the Richard I was thinking of had been a priest, and he had been in the Vatican, and he was, I believe, in Denver at that time. And for some reason, he had gotten out of the priesthood, and I thought possibly he was going to do some cleaning out of the Vatican. Well, I got out, and the kid I picked up was a kid I had known for 4 or 5 years from down in Missouri. Well, I brought him back to Peoria, and tried to keep him out of trouble as much as I could. And I had to go to Chicago to a seminar. When I came back, there were two guys prowling around. It was my dad's property at that time. And I asked them what they were doing there. Oh, well, we're from the utility company. They were lying through their teeth. They were deputy sheriffs. And I went in, and I had paperwork and checks to write and so forth, so I'm writing checks, and all of a sudden there's a loud banging on the back door, so I got up to go to the back door. When I opened the door, they grabbed me and pulled me out. And they said, where's Richard? I said, I am Richard. Well, the other kid was upstairs. They went through that house, and they went through everything. I'm being held in the backyard, and I am burning up, believe me. But I'm not resisting them in any way. Well, I have never seen Richard since then. I don't know whatever happened to him. They were supposed to be sending him back down to Missouri, but I couldn't get any information, and nobody would tell me anything. And I'm hoping he's all right. But the kid that I took to California, they sent him into the Veterans Hospital out there, and he went to the Veterans Hospital, and they came back. And I'm getting my story mixed up. He had been to the Veterans Hospital out there, and he told how good they were to him. But he was back in the house that he was at when I took him out there originally. And when I brought Richard back, I told him I'd call him, and I was driving straight through. I got here in Peoria at 9:30 in the evening. So I thought, well, that's still early enough. I can give him a call. So I called him on my cell phone. No answer. which is not uncommon in the mountains. So I thought, well, I'll call him in the morning. Called him in the morning, still no answer. So I called him an hour later. Gal at her house that he was staying in answered the phone, and I said, can I talk to him, to Brian? And she said, he's laying in bed, he's turning yellow. I said, if he's turning yellow, he's still got oxygen in his veins. Call 911 and get the fire department out there to give him oxygen. Maybe they can save him. I can't do that. I said, get your ass off the phone and call 911, and I hung up on her. An hour later, she called me. She's standing out in the middle of the street. I know what she's doing because I can hear the sirens coming. Now, wait a minute. That's an hour after I had talked to her. And, of course, he was pronounced dead. Well, it was about a month later, there was a guy living in her garage, and he was trying to get in on, well, I haven't told you this. While he was out there, he bought, I'll call it a ranch, which had belonged to Dick Cheney. That name sound familiar? And there was an airport on it, or I should say a landing field. There were underground living quarters, so I'll put it that way. Plus the ranch-style house and so forth. The good old Dick Cheney, who when I was a kid was a whiz kid on the radio, and when he was on the radio, oh, he was coming back with the most fabulous speeches for whatever question they asked him, and you could tell that they were all printed for him, so all he had to do was read them. But all of a sudden, here he is high in the government. And, well, going back to Brian, Brian had planted hemp plants, which was perfectly legal in Colorado. And he had already gotten the first planting growing checks on it. And he had a $10 million check in his bill pool, which I kiddingly said, well, before you go for the ride in that sports car, give me that bill pool. I don't want you doing anything goofy with it. I never even looked in the bill pool. I just stuck it in my pocket. So when he came back, he said, that was a great ride. Well, he had promised the woman that he was staying at her house that he would buy her a sports car. And we were sitting in the dealer's showroom, and I'm watching them pull in with a two wagon or truckloads of new cars. And she's looking at a car that's 7 years old, and they wanted, I can't recall, I want to say $37,000 for it, I think it was. It was candy apple red, but it was a stick shift, and she had no idea how to drive a stick shift. But she's got a guy out trying to show her how to drive it when they brought those cars in. So I went over and I looked, and there was a black car just like the one she was driving, only this one was a convertible. And guess it was priced at the same price as the one that was 7 years old. Isn't that cool? Or I said, you know, I wouldn't even look at that old car when I could buy a new one for the same price. Well, I don't know. She couldn't make up her mind. To make a long story short, nothing took place on that. But that's when I had that check in my pocket in his billfold. And it was that night that I left, or the next morning I left to come back to Peoria. And when I got back, and I called the night after I got back and found out he was dead. And interesting enough, there was a man from Texas. That gal, the guy who was living behind her, and there was another party that were all claiming that that check belonged to them. What they didn't know is Brian had it set up so that three people had to sign that check or it could not be cash. Well, I never did find out whatever happened to that check. I never actually saw it. But those people claiming to be in government were nothing but a bunch of murderers. I'll stop there.
So you think things are getting better or worse?
Right now, the way they got things set up, like I say, the people that I thought were friends here are all quote-unquote enemies. The officer that the so-called PI beat the hell out of, when he moved to Florida and he died down there. 2 weeks ago, another officer who joined the Air National Guard the same year I did, in 1949, died, and he was a brigadier general, and he was a heck of a good guy. And he took me for my first jet aircraft or fighter ride. At Peoria Airport, the runways weren't long enough for jets at that time, so we had to go down to Springfield. And we had one heck of a good time. Like I say, he was one heck of a good guy. And I sure hated, I didn't know he had made general until he died. Well, I did. I heard about it about a month before. One of the guys that was out there told me he was a general. But,
am I muted?
He was one heck of a good guy, and he was fighting with some of these guys, and I never found out what was going on with the so-called government to him. But the majority of those guys, like I say, they had no idea that they were doing things. Well, yesterday I picked up the paper and I saw where one of my friends had died, and I found out things about him I didn't know. He had gotten out of the Air National Guard. He bought into a music business. He was a teacher. I mean, he had all kinds of things going for him, but he did it all legitimately. And you know, when I see guys like that, I know there were good guys that had to fight for everything that they ever had. And to have somebody like the clowns I got on the county turn into such greedy people that they wanted to be able to go out and beat people up and so forth. And I heard them say it themselves. Oh, we picked this guy up. I was just taking him into the county jail. And he started to fight with me. And he said, I hit him in the mouth with my sap, knocked his teeth out. Well, let me tell you about when I was a deputy. I stopped in. I was off duty. I'm in civilian clothes. I got a brand new white sport jacket on. I got a shoulder holster and my gun in there. I walked in, and this guy was standing in the jailer's office, and he's got the toe of his shoe cut off, and his big toe is about 3 inches around, and black and blue. I mean, this guy could hardly walk. So they asked me, would you take him over to the sheriff's office? I said, sure, I'll take him over. Well, put the cuffs on him. I said, he can hardly walk. I'm not going to put cuffs on him. So I just walked him out the door and across the street, got in the middle of the street, and he said, well, what would you do if I started running? I laughed at him. I said, don't be silly. You can't even walk. How are you going to run? He said, well, I'm just asking. I said, well, I wouldn't chase you. He said, what would you do? I said, I'd put 638 slugs right between your shoulder blades. And he looked at me and says, you're not carrying a gun. I said, don't try me. Well, he didn't. I got him in the sheriff's office. His wife was in there waiting, and there was also some deputies from up in Michigan waiting to take him back to Michigan for non-payment of child support. I don't know what happened or if he actually got to Michigan or if they got him paid up or what, but he was back down in Lakin, Illinois, out in boondocks. And I got a call from the sheriff down there. He had just murdered his wife, the one that was waiting for him at the sheriff's office in Peoria. He had shot her 23 times with a .22 semi-automatic rifle. And I thought that SOB. Here she was. She was standing behind him, and she was doing everything she could to help him, and he turned on her, and he killed her. But you never know. Like I say, at that time, I had all the sheriffs around here. We would wait for the office to close down, and they call me, and we get stuff done. But if they turned it in through the office, it never got done. Now, that made me open my eyes. And the worst part of it is, that was right after I got out of the Air Force, which is a story of its own. I had no job, and I walked into the music store where I bought my trumpet, and Floyd said, where have you been? I said, well, I was just got out of the Air Force. And he said, oh. He said, I've been looking for you. And well, looking for me for what? He said, I want you to go to work with me. I'm standing there, I'm thinking, well, I'm not doing anything anyhow. Yeah, I'll go to work for you. And a lot of things happened there that was really very interesting. And I was at that time making $100 a week, but I was working 6 days. And I had worked up to the $100. And I was also making another anywhere from 40 to $60 a week extra playing in other bands. I took a job as a deputy sheriff for $60 a week. So I'll say I took a 50% cut in pay and had to pay for everything out of my own pocket to get the experience. Well, I guess I'm just plain stupid because I got a chance to see what was going on. And now I can't even walk into the county courthouse because as soon as I do, you can't walk in without going through a metal detector. You got to take everything out of your pockets, show them what you got, and there's usually at least three and sometimes four deputy sheriffs by that metal detector, and sometimes there's even more, or some of them are standing back a little bit, but they'll follow you all the way through the courthouse. When I went to court, I was always in the courtroom alone. They didn't want anybody to see or hear anything I had to say. And, of course, nothing I ever said got anywhere. And it's still that way. That's why I never told them that I was the de jure governor of Illinois. But my entire staff, after they killed Brian, I still have contact with a couple of them. But people have no idea. And, of course, they got Illinois as a sanctuary state, and the quote-unquote present governor, like I say, he's raising taxes, and they're creating everything they can, and for every man, and this is what the people don't know, even the ones who are quote-unquote in these positions where they quote-unquote have all this power, that they're paying their own salaries because it's being stolen out of their pockets. And they have no idea of it. I'll stop there. Is everybody gone?
Nope, the floor
is here. No, I'm
go ahead.
Well, that's tragic. That was really tragic. It was a great story.
People have no idea. And if you go to your local library, go into our local library and take any department or subdivision of your government, of your city, county, state, or federal, and ask for the CAFR, Certified Annual Financial Report, and you can get them out of the library. And you'll see how much money that they've got.
Is this like a single use? Oh, okay. All right.
Certified Annual Financial Report. CAFR. Now, I can also tell you something else. And I actually was wanting to stumble on this. I went into the IRS office. And I got a hold, there was only one man in the office, and I got a hold of him, and I got to ask him questions that nobody else wanted to answer. I said, is there any kind of a document that they've got to have saying that they are qualified to be a non-profit organization for the government. He said, oh, yeah. They got to have an annual letter of the annual letter of determination. Now, this is every year for each one of those sub offices in the government. So I was contacting a friend and I told him about it, and he said, wait a minute. I gave him the address on it. He said, I'm going to go on the international. So he went on the international. He said, my God. He said, this is true all over the world. And he said, it's also true that there's not anyone using that letter. And if you don't have that letter, you're not a government. If you're not a government, you can't charge taxes. You can't charge anything. Now, wait a minute. Now we're back to treason again. That ought to be enough to give you an idea of what's going on. Well, I'm going to have to get off, so I'm going to cut off. It's been a pleasure, but I didn't intend to do all the talking. Have a good night.
Anybody else want to talk?
I came in late. This is Catherine from California.
Well, it's an open meeting.
I came in late. So.
It's a discussion group. It's an open meeting, and you can say anything you want.
Let's see. What do I have of interest? Well, I can tell you that I, in California yesterday, we had another landmark piece of legislation. It is Senate Bill 67, let's see, no, Senate Bill 276, which is a follow-up to SB 277, which was the mandatory K-12 vaccine bill. And the author of that bill is Richard Pan. He just happens to be the senator in my district. I just happen to be the person who filed a recall against him 4 years ago. Yesterday, I spent most of the day at the Capitol building with a partner of mine who's a citizen author of another bill, which pretty much everybody is, likewise, pretty much everybody in America should be concerned about. That was actually SB 673 is an amendment to the California Healthy Youth Act, which is the statute, the so-called law, that the comprehensive sexuality education curriculum is driven on. And so that bill that we've shopped around and we actually have gotten picked up, it got a bill number. It was supposed to be presented yesterday in the same chamber with about, I think, 14 other pieces of legislation, which is a complete disgrace, yesterday. But actually what happened is our senator who picked it up to carry it to the floor had decided that he wanted more time to cultivate more coalition on it, on our bill. So they put it off until January of next year, okay? So what we did is we went around and a goal of mine, if anybody remembers who I am, Catherine O'Neill Duran, a goal of mine is actually to combine the sexuality, the sexuality education people, the opponents to that, but also the education movements and the vaccine truth movements. Okay, so everything seems to be driven on the education system, a hijacked American institution, right? That is one of the tenets of the Communist Manifesto and the cultural Marxism, and that's exactly what's happening. So what we did yesterday is, I wanted to tell you what the California Health or the what the bill actually does. The bill actually changes one word from may be age appropriate to shall be age appropriate. That there's a whole thing surrounding that. But the other thing is that the curriculum must be available to parents online to view 24/7 at their leisure. And then the third component is an active opt-in, which is there are a couple of states that actually do active opt-in, but most of the states are actually allowing. I hate that word from government, but they're allowing a opt-out. But a parent has to know that the sex ed is what it is. Otherwise, most parents think, well, I'm a prude if I don't approve of it. My kid's going to have a fit. Other kids are going to have a fit. Other parents are going to have a fit. Everybody wants our kids to be sexual, have a sexual education and reproductive information and body, all that stuff, and yada, yada, yada. Nobody actually really knows what it is, and I can tell you it is, for anybody who is the most sexually uninhibited, let's just say, will be shocked that this stuff is being presented to TK, which is 3- and 4-year-olds, through 12th grade. But in particular, we're talking about literally grooming for pedophilia and pederasty. And if there are some people, which I'm finding that there are many people who are unaware, as I was, of the word pederasty, it is grown-up man and young boy with a young boy in a position of submission. And it is depraved. I don't have the language for how depraved this is. It is absolutely unbelievable. And I actually have images. I have blown up some of the code, some of the code compliance curriculum that meets the standards. And it is Common Core informed. So it's Planned Parenthood. There's another outfit called GLSEN, the Gay Lesbian Education Network, and a couple of other LGBTQ, PPKIA plus now, advocacy organizations that have written the curriculum for 70 to 80 million children and in public education. And who else? They want to add NAMBLA. I think I mentioned that before. They want to add NAMBLA, the National Association of Man Boy Love Association. You get it. You get the picture. Man Boy Love Association. And, this is instructional. This is instruction, explicit instruction in every conceivable sexual act. And one of the things that I was prepared to do, and I'm trying to train other people as so-called activists, I hate to sound so jaded, but it's really difficult to get people to actually step up to a microphone and say these things. But I have spent a lot of time trying to train people to say kind of what I say. My narrative is this. I want one individual on a school board, a legislative council, a legislative committee, a legislator, a legislative chief of staff, a legal aide, anybody. I want one individual to articulate how, where the line is. Where is the line? So in the instructions, an instruction for the comprehensive sexuality education. And the curriculum, there's several different curricula that any state can choose from. It states in there, the way that they position it in a lot of the suggested reading is that it's sexual acts between a boy and a boy, a man and a man, a woman and a woman, or a man and a woman, or a boy and a girl. So my question is, I want one person to articulate, why is this a two-person limitation? Quite frankly, I'm offended. Perhaps I'm offended because I have sex with multiple people at one time, and that's normal for me, and I want my child to know that too. Where's the line? Why is it just a two-person enterprise here? I actually want to know, and I want them to verbalize, where the line is. Where does the public school system draw the line for sexual, normal sexual behavior? Because how many people, why is it limited to two? Why isn't it more? And why is it limited to human beings? I want to know why not, because they're already teaching that it's inanimate objects. You can use inanimate objects with other people, mutual masturbation, other people with other, you know, sexual objects. And if you don't have enough money for, I think I might have sent that along. There's a pretty unbelievable graphic illustration that's a color detailed graphic. If you don't have money or access to sex toys, why, you can just use cucumbers, bananas, and carrots. And I'm not even joking. And this is a youth handout that I'm talking about out of UCSF, that's University of California of San Francisco, and big surprise, and my previous hometown, and what was I going to say with that? So the UN, the United Nations, defines youth. This is a youth handout, and the United Nations defines youth as 10 years and up. So we're teaching 10-year-olds that if they don't have access to, you know, whatever, now they're never going to look at their salads the same, because, and they're going to giggle and laugh or be grossed out when they're, you know, slicing up cucumbers and things like that. It's just unbelievable. Well, you can slice open a condom and use it as a barrier, and I hate to use this language, but I'm going to do it anyway, because they're teaching this to children, and this isn't limited to California, by the way. This is an international thing. This is a UNESCO thing. It is adopted by the United States. It is going in various, under various statutes, under state education code. And like I said, they can choose all kinds of different curriculum. There's like 5 to 7 different curricula, different companies that you can purchase these from, but they all have to be code, ed code compliant. And anyway, you can cut open a condom and you can use that as a barrier for oral sex. And yeah, there are illustrations, and it is suggested reading, and this is the coming from not only the publisher, but coming from the state law we found this in a number of different school districts where it is suggested school-wide reading. It's across the board, school-wide suggested reading. So we spent the day yesterday shopping not shopping around, because we've already got our bill picked up and everything, and we've got a great committee on it and everything, but it goes against my grain. I'm just going to tell you this because this is in LA. It goes against my grain because I am not a legislation person, because number one, I'm looking at all the different ways that the comprehensive sexuality education is unconstitutional. Teaching this kind of stuff to children is unconstitutional, not just because, you know, we don't like it. We actually have to, you know, qualify that. But my position being that all the depravity that goes into, you know, creating this stuff, and believe me, it is depraved. I'm privy to some of it. It doesn't have any authority or any business existing in the first place. So to slap a piece of legislation to mitigate it actually makes what doesn't exist under the law exist. So it goes against my grain. But the reason that I'm doing it is because it was a strategic move. I'm not doing it, actually. I'm a part of this. I actually helped with the language. I helped with the editing. And, you know, we're shopping it around. And I'm actually on the committee to branch out and, you know, to actually grow this thing for a committee in January. But the reason I had agreed to do this in the first place is because it is a way to foment anger in the vaccine truth movement because of this. The vaccine people are upset because of this bill, SB 276, because what it does is the SB 277, the first bill that actually was the vaccine mandate for K-12, the way that the crooked legislator got this passed was that he promised that any doctor, and he's on record of saying this, any doctor can write up a medical exemption for any parent who, you know, seeks out a doctor. The doctor decides that the child shouldn't get a vaccine. They can get a medical exemption, no questions asked, okay? So now 4 years later, after that passed, now what that legislator is doing, by the way, he is a licensed doctor. He calls himself a pediatrician. He's never been in practice as a pediatrician. He's never been a practicing physician of any kind. But because he has a license and all that kind of stuff, everybody imagines that he's an expert. It's all an imagination. And he now is coming out with this bill 276 that vilifies the doctors who are writing those medical exemptions and calling them crooks. Like, they're benefiting monetarily, duh. Right, they do charge for them. They're benefiting monetarily, economically, for writing these fraudulent, now he's calling them fraudulent, medical exemptions. So now what that does is it closes a loophole. So for me, discussing any part of the badness of the vaccine, for example, vaccines cause autism, vaccines cause febrile seizures, vaccines cause Guillain-Barré syndrome, acute flaccid myelitis, it causes encephalitis, encephalopathy, it causes skin problems, it causes all kinds of allergies. We have the sickest children on the planet, and 50% of our kids have a chronic illness. And we know that these are coming from, you know, they're listed in the adverse reactions of vaccines. So, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. But when we start getting into the details of the badness of the vaccine and all the poisons and all that kind of stuff, the fact that that no doctor is capable of getting informed consent, giving the information, the parent cannot get the information from their doctor in order to give informed consent. None of those things matter. It doesn't matter if the vaccine is poison. It doesn't matter if the vaccine is as safe as water, which the crooked legislator actually did say out loud at UC Berkeley. It doesn't matter because the government has no business mandating anything on the people. So there is no discussion. The only thing that matters is that government doesn't have the authority to do that. The problem that we have, and it's on video, I'd love to post it somewhere, but we have this on video. The legislators, there were two Republicans. Okay, we know everybody knows that it's pretty much a two-party system. So we have Democrats and Republicans, and we have, you know, I think there are seven Democrats and two Republicans. So the Republican, one of the Republican senators was asking questions, but even she, a so-called constitutionalist, which is a whole other story here, was not qualified or informed enough to ask the appropriate questions to try this. This was supposed to be a trial. there's a hearing, and it must be heard, and it must be tried as if it's an actual trial, right? You have to get the truth out. But unfortunately, she'd ask mild questions and then just let them die without any follow-up, and she's on to the next question. So, and I know her personally, so I know that she was not doing that on purpose. She's not part of this picture. She's legitimately, straight up doing the best that she can, and I know her because I know her personally. But that's our problem, is that we have – oh, and here's the other thing. On the education bill that we're working on, we went into my partner's district senator, okay? He's not there, but we talked to his chief of staff, who came out with a big grin. She had been trying to explain to me how he was playing mind games with her, and I said, you're describing gaslighting. That's gaslighting, or, it's actually crazy making. It's actually a tool that many people who are emotional and mental abusers are not even aware that they're doing, but it's called crazy making. And I said, that's what he's trying to do to you. So I wonder if it's malicious or if he just doesn't even realize he's doing it. So we showed up in there, and she's trying to have a conversation with him. And he says, he had this grin on his face because she had tried to get her senator to pick up this bill, and he didn't do it. So we ended up getting – by the way, this is a bipartisan bill. This should not be partisan at all. It's a bipartisan issue. Parental rights, right? So she tried to get him soften things up a little bit and repair the possibility of – some hard feelings on his part. He comes out with this big grin on his face, like, "Well, your bill is not going to pass because majority rules." And I said, "Well, I let her talk." And she says, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And he says, "Well, it's seven Democrats and two Republicans on the committee, so there's no way you're going to win." And I said, "Well, now how do you know that? Because he says, "Well, it's majority rules." And I said, "Majority rules? Is that the type of government that we have?" And he says, "Well, do you know how government actually works?" And I said, "Yeah, frankly, I do. As a matter of fact, I do very well." I said, "So why don't you explain it to me?" He goes, "Well, that's what democracy is." And I said, "I understand that. Too bad we didn't have that type of arrangement." So, and as a matter of fact, by the way, and I'll tell you in 1 second here what it actually says, the senator, his campaign poster, he has on his wall in the office right above where I was standing. And I've been waiting for the opportunity to use that poster. And on the poster, it says, got a picture of Senator Glaser, and it says, "My 10 governing principles. Number one, represent the people of our Senate district, not political parties or special interests." So I said, is that compliant with the first governing principle of our legislator here? Because that sounds to me like you've already decided that there's no way that because you think in between your two ears, you believe that this bill is a Republican bill, so therefore 6 months prior, you've already got it defeated. And that's because there's seven on the Democrat side and only two on the Republicans. So, duh, I have a big problem with that. And he actually was really, really upset with me, which just made me so happy. So, anyway, it was very eventful yesterday, but... the statute did get moved out of committee. It goes to appropriations and then on to the next committee. And there's no way that it's not going to pass. It will pass. And this entire country needs to keep its eye on SB 276 and SB 277 because it's coming to your state too. I mean, we just saw this happen in New York. It just did happen in New York. I mean, de Blasio got the nerve, and I know that he got the nerve off of this, off of what was going on in California, and so did Oregon and Washington. They're doing the same thing. And the reason for this is because the people cannot articulate an argument against it. They're participating, and what they're doing is they're going and they're saying, we want a permission slip from our government that we can purchase from our doctor in order for us to get our children into the public indoctrination system without having to comply with an unbelievably grotesque, condition for enrollment and participation. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So people don't look at it that way. They think, well, we have to get our kids in school because we have to go to work and make a living and, you know, pay for our cars and houses and food on the table. They can't imagine that this is actual bombs and bullets leveling their town and their homes and their schools, and they're sending their kids out in it. So, I don't know how many people are on the call who's listening or anything, but I would love to know if what I just said makes any sense. I would love to know if what I said makes any sense, because I need to fine-tune my narrative here. Because people are not understanding when I say, take your children out of school. If, and I can tell you this, there were at least 1,000 parents there with white T-shirts on that stood in the hallways of our state capitol for 7 hours, 8, some of them 9 hours, in a hallway that was no less than 100 degrees and like a sauna at 130 degrees. It was an absolute sweat box in horrible conditions. And they stood there waiting to get in there to say their Me Toos, you know, I oppose, you know, please, 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 senators, vote down this horrible bill. You know, I pray that you do the right thing. You know, stupid things like that. I'm sorry, but they're stupid things. You need to go in there and demand that your representative, and this is exactly what I said. I'm going to paraphrase what I said. I went up and I said, my name is Catherine O'Neill Duran, Concerned Parents of Elk Grove, and County Committee of Safety of Sacramento. I'm representing over 700 individuals across the state of California in opposition to this bill and every other unlawful act of government, so be on notice. And I looked at every single one of them, and I got that on the camera. And everybody else should be saying the same thing. Instead of saying, my child was injured by horrible poison vaccines and, you know, please do the right thing, and crying, many of them cried. You know, and I'm not admonishing them for doing this. I'm just saying, I'm admonishing them to learn that when you do that, you empower them. You empower these jackass, constitutionally illiterate people that we pay for no other purpose except for one only, to preserve the right to life, liberty, and property, and no other reason. And this is what they're doing. So, I do my best to educate, but I'm a little long-winded, so.
Well, I don't
over time.
Don't mind the long-winded. I'd like you to start out at the first and, you know, have your points all lined up. Like you say, improve your presentation.
Yeah, and, that was just kind of ad lib. I hadn't planned on speaking at all. Dead air, and I kind of thought, you know, I'll just fill up some space here in case nobody else
has anything to say. That's fine. What I'm saying is, do plan, and you can have the floor next week if you start right off the front. If you're here right when it starts, I can give you the floor, and you're ready to go. So why don't you make about a 45-minute presentation, make your points, and then let's take questions next week. Is that a good idea?
Actually, that sounds great, but you know what? I might have to do it the week after because I'm still moving. And I have, we're closing
on. We'll just continue on with its discussion group. It's whatever the people want to talk about, okay?
Okay, yeah. I'm going to try to tune in, but if I can't.
I look forward to hearing your whole presentation.
Great. Very good. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, we're glad you're here. I need
you
to wrap it up, though, because I'm over time. So,
okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone that participated. The thoughts and ideas expressed are those of the people who express them, not necessarily the NLA. And we're thankful everyone is here. This has been Discussion Group. It happens every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And what would that be, 6 p.m. Pacific Time? And we just open it up to the floor. And we appreciate everybody participating tonight. And with that, I'll close the recording.